You're listening to the Carnegie Tsinghua China and the World podcast, a series of conversations with Chinese and international experts on China's foreign policy, international role, and China's relations with the world, brought to you from the Carnegie Tsinghua Center here in Beijing. I'm Paul Hanley, the director of the Carnegie Tsinghua Center, and I'll be your host. I'm talking to you today from the School of International Studies at Peking University, and I'm joined by my friend Dr. Wang Dong, associate professor at the School of International Studies, and director of the Center for Northeast Asian Strategic Studies. Wang Dong, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Paul, for inviting me.
We'd like to talk to you today to get your insights on recent developments on North Korea and what you think they might mean for China. Well, let's talk a little bit about China's diplomatic efforts.
Sure.
Currently, China's diplomatic relations with North Korea, at least in the past, recent past, we understand have been handled by the International Department of the party. But there has been some speculation in the press and in discussions I've had with Chinese experts that the Ministry of Foreign Affairs may be playing a greater role now, that there may have been a shift in terms of who is handling that issue. What do you think the possibility that this has taken place is, and what would the implications be for that?
Well, I've heard about people sort of speculating, you know, that is happening. Well, to be very honest with you, you know, I don't know what's what is really going on. But just from a scholarly point of view, as a scholar, when I look at this, you know, I would say, to some extent, if you want to make sense of this sort of, you know, perceived change, I would say it's because. It's also because I think the Chinese leaders want to first of all, better coordinate and have a more effective management of the policy issues. Because International Department it's a party organization, so it does not have its portfolio to deal with other, you know, government at the official level. So that, of course, naturally limits its to what extent, maybe in terms of internal policy deliberations, you know, their voices and opinions play a very important role. But what about, you know, dealing with United States, South Korea, Japan, Russia, and all other members of the international community? Because of the nature of International Department, they cannot play or be as effective as foreign ministry in dealing with other counterparts. So from that point of view, I would see this as a very natural process. If you were, top leaders, you naturally wanted to say, okay, now want foreign ministry to take up more responsibility in dealing with this issue, but not in suggesting that there's, you know, in terms of performance, so I don't think we should read too much into that.
Got it. Let's look a little bit at recent developments, recent events. While the annual U.S.-South Korea joint military drills were taking place, North Korea launched a series of short-range ballistic missiles off its eastern coast. And they did this twice in the space of 1 week to express their discontent at the U.S.-South Korea exercises. One of these missiles barely missed, it was reported that one of these missiles barely missed a Chinese passenger jet flying its normal route from Tokyo to Shenyang. Is this a concern to China and Chinese people? And what was the reaction, as you understand it, in China to that particular incident?
Well, absolutely. I think this is, personally, I believe this is really a very irresponsible behavior, I think, by the North Korean part. And I think the Chinese government has made it very clear, you know, they are, it's of great concern to the Chinese government and the people that this thing happened. I think the North Korea really owe Chinese government and people an explanation of why this happened. And I'm not sure if you have noted, but I think just 2 days ago, the Global Times just ran a op-ed piece, authored by a former deputy commander of the Nanjing Military Command, the Lieutenant General Wang Hongguang. He talks specifically the dangers from military point of view, the dangers of North Korea's behavior. And mm-hmm. and he, I think, he's make it very clear, made it very clear in his piece that North Korea's behavior is unacceptable. It's extremely dangerous, mm-hmm. and China should make this very clear to North Korea that, you know, and ask him to basically promise things like that will not happen again. But my own, and I will say I fully agree with General Wang Guang's points. And personally, I would also tend to, well, this is also a pure, you know, conjecture, of course. Mm-hmm. I would tend to think that this is perhaps happened not as a result of a deliberate North Korea trying to send any kind of message to China, but rather just because simply they just messed it up and they mm-hmm. didn't handle this very well, right. and it just happened. But still, I think you know, I think because it's matter of a life of I think 220 plus sure. Chinese passengers. This is serious sure. business. Sure. So I think that's why I strongly believe that Chinese government, you know, and the people really have to make this very clear to North Korea. That they should better be careful about doing things like that.
So from that standpoint, there are some that believe we're moving into another provocative period, mm-hmm. that the North Koreans may engage in a series of provocative actions here in the near future, including possibly a fourth nuclear test. I've talked to some Chinese experts that believe this could be this could have a significant impact on the way the Chinese leadership is looking at this issue. What kind of impact do you think a fourth nuclear test would have in terms of China's perspective of this problem?
Well, I think the first of all, you know, as you just indicated, I think we are also extremely concerned about the possibility of a fourth nuclear test. I think it will be a real, real big thing. I think it's gonna again bring the Korean Peninsula, Northeast Asia, to the cycles of confrontation and escalation of crisis, and basically just make it a lot more instabilities and dangers in the region. And certainly, you know, we will strongly oppose any such kind of moves by North Korea. But now the question is that how are we going to do it? And I always over the view that deterrence, you know, because from a scholarly point, we also study deterrence. But deterrence, yes, it has some utility in terms of the as a tool of your, you know, toolkit, so to speak. Put it into a foreign policy, but again, deterrence also has limits. You can only deter your adversary or enemy from doing something what you perceive as change of status quo, but you cannot force it to, for instance, to be more cooperative. And in order to do that, you have to put on the table more sort of positive inducements, so to speak. So I think to manage the change we are facing now, I think the international community, including China, the United States, South Korea, Japan, Russia, and all other stakeholders, we really have to stand united on those issues. Mm. Instead of sort of pointing fingers to each other or accusing, you know, the other party being, you know, doing something, you know, for short of your expectation or others. To stand united, very important, and do, you know, understand. I you know, emphasize again that because oftentimes people do forget about that.
Yeah.
We do have shared interests on this issue. Fundamentally, I think we have shared interests, and there are some differences in terms of approaches.
Yeah.
But that is so natural. Even among best friends, you know, we are very good partner. And you can call, you know, friends in sort of dealing with this common challenge, but it's just don't sort of you know, exaggerate that differences so to suggest that now we have fundamental differences. Well, it's a matter of, you know, either you are with us or you are with them. I think that is not a helpful mentality when it comes to this issue. So I think we have to stand united and send a unified message. Mm. So China has been, what we have been doing, I think, my own interpretation, observation is that we're trying very hard to narrow the gap between the positions of DPRK and the positions of the United States and by extension of South Korea. We do understand there's now very big gap between your positions. But also I think we do...
Between whose positions?
I think the American position and the North Korea position in terms of what are the conditions to come back to a six-party talks.
Right.
But I think also we have to remember that we do agree that I think also fundamental at a fundamental level.
Right.
Diplomatic solution way is the only feasible way to really deal with the issue because military options is just simply just unthinkable, I think, at the moment. So
no.
So I think we have been doing this very hard. Of course, sometimes we get some criticism from, the American side. And to be very honest, I think a lot of this criticism just simply unfair and misplaced.
I think, as you know, I was the White House representative to the six-party talks between 2007 and 2007 and 2008. And this was actually, I would argue, a period of good U.S.-China cooperation.
Yes.
We've gotten to a point, in my own view, where I think it is very difficult to see sincerity from North Korea that they're willing to enter negotiations. And I think my sense is this is the biggest concern from the United States
yeah.
is coming back to the table simply for the sake of talking or meeting is would not be constructive.
Mm-hmm.
And there would need to be some genuine sincerity that from the North Koreans that they're willing to rectify some of the steps that they've taken to date.
Mm-hmm.
But in the United States, and this is my last question, in the United States there's a general, I think, a growing weariness over the diplomatic efforts, you know.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, during the administration of President Clinton, the U.S. was involved in the agreed framework.
Mm-hmm.
And that did not work. We found out that the North Koreans were cheating.
Mm-hmm.
And President Bush engaged a lot of his own political capital in the six-party talks. And in December of 2008, the North Koreans walked out. And they have said now that they're no longer a part of the six-party talks. So there's a feeling that it's been tried, that the North Koreans aren't serious about this. So why move forward on diplomacy if the North Koreans are not sincere? And there's a feeling, I think, in the United States that this is really a growing problem for China,
mm-hmm.
more, in fact, than for the United States. For many years, China said this is a U.S.-North Korea problem. Many people in the United States who say, this is a China-North Korea problem. And the United States is willing to help China solve its growing North Korea problem. How do you see that issue?
Okay. You know, again, this really gets back to, I think, what I previously noted. You know, frankly, I really believe this is a shared problem.
Shared problem.
It's
yeah.
not just your problem
right.
or, you know, or my problem. So that's why I strongly believe that that kind of mentality is not helpful. You know,
mm-hmm.
pointing fingers, say, okay, that's your problem. If you do not fix it, you know, you are the one to blame for
right,
that.
Right.
And sometimes I heard, you know, from my American colleagues, they would argue that, you know, China's policy toward North Korea really is a failure. Then I would say, you know, sir, if this is a failure, it's really a shared failure. It's a collective failure.
Mm.
You know, so I think try to single out China or point a finger to the United States is not helpful.
Yeah.
I think that that's, I think, first point, number one, I want to emphasize. And secondly, I believe, I agree that this is an extremely difficult issue.
Yeah.
Just because North Korea, you know, it's very, very difficult to deal with because it also has a very strong determination and will when it comes to this issue. So that's why international politics, particularly, you know, the denuclearization issues or proliferation issues is really difficult to manage, to deal with. But again, I think my understanding is that many in China, we do believe, I think including I think Chinese leaders, we do believe that at least part of the very important motives, reasons why North Korea wanted to develop nuclear weapons to begin with, is this very strong, deep-rooted insecurity about, you know, about its regional survival. And where does it come from? Of course, come from the United States, right? And because you have, and then, you know, I'm not saying that I completely subscribe to that argument or to push that argument to the extreme, saying it's all American, you know, responsibility, it's all your mistake, because, but again, like I said, you know, it's a collective, it's a shared challenge we are facing now, and we just have to do that, I think, in sort of in a very cooperative manner, in good faith, and also in a spirit really manifestation of the we call it great power, a new type of great power relationship between China and the United States, and I recognize this is a very difficult issue. But also, I very much agree with you. You know, this is also an issue area where really a lot of cooperation has been forged between China and the United States. And I would argue that we, you know, would like to see more cooperation coming from.
So I appreciate the perspective. It's a shared problem. Yeah. And I think it may be healthy to get away from pointing the finger saying it's a U.S.-North Korea problem or it's a China-North Korea problem. If we can find ourselves to agree that it's a shared problem and that we can deal with it in the context of this trying to operationalize the new type of great power relations, if that's the case, then give me a sense of how can we align more closely our efforts, because we sometimes don't agree on the tactics, right? Yeah. So where are the opportunities for the United States and China to align closer on our joint efforts? The United States would say we need to have a collection of both carrots and sticks. We need to be both willing to apply together pressure or additional sanctions where required to get the North Koreans to change their behavior. Where do you see the opportunities for greater U.S.-China cooperation?
I think in principle, I really don't see a fundamental disagreement, I think, between China and the United States. You know, when you talk about combination, it has to be a combination of pressure and inducement. Mm-hmm. And I think that holds true for almost many, many other cases in international relations as well. When it comes to this particular North Korea nuclear challenge, I would argue that China really does have a sort of, sometimes, as you probably know this very well, I think American strategists and strategic analysts tend to argue that, well, China, including, you know, Dr. Henry Kissinger, he would argue that, well, China is really a nation that has a long perspective. They can look, you know, decades, hundreds of years from now, and really has strategic vision. Yeah. And I would argue that when, you know, in this case, I would argue that China really does have a strategic vision, which really goes beyond the single, I think, the nuclear issue. I'm not saying that China is not trying very hard to resolve that issue. I think China is. We are working very hard, I think, along with the United States and other international members of international communities. But it's just that we have this idea of peaceful development, right? It's really about, you know, how we sort of get us out of this hook. Of course, we have to manage this issue, prevent it from further deteriorating, including the sort of military, you know, tensions on the Korean Peninsula. We have to contain them in a way, but then we have to gradually. I think we have to at the fundamental level. We have to agree about the future of the Korean Peninsula. That is extremely important. And of course, you know, when it comes to that question, I think the discussion could become much looser, much more loose in the sense that we introduce more uncertainties into our discussion. But that, again, is very important. I think if we can develop a shared understanding about, you know, which I personally believe actually is shared interest of China, United States, and the Korean people on the Korean Peninsula as well, a peaceful unification of the Korean Peninsula. But I think that's just a sort of, you know, years or even decades down the road. But in order to achieve that, we have to, you know, to work together and to bring this hope to jumpstart this diplomatic process, six-party talks. I think that is very important. I've heard so many Western observers arguing, you know, six-party talks, just that, it's no longer, it's useless. Well, I think I wouldn't be that pessimistic about that. You know, I think it's diplomatic means, like platform, like six-party talks, is still very important. And if we can take sort of one step or a few steps back and try to have a longer perspective, try to have strategic vision, you know, then we can see how we can help North Korea people, North Korea government and its people, really to come back to international community and really give them a chance to develop their economy and bring prosperity to their own people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just over that process, it's naturally, if you assume that one day if North Korea people live a prosperous life and decent life, why do they have to hold up to nuclear weapons? But that's a long sort of evolution from point A to that point B. But I think, you know, we have to work in a sort of with a good spirit of cooperation, you know, and this new type of great power relationship. If we can make that happen, I think that really is something quite extraordinary, quite historic. Yeah.
Well, on that positive note, thank you very much for spending time with us today.
Thank you, Paul.
Appreciate you sharing your insights, which are always extremely valuable and important. So thank you very much. That's it for this edition of the Carnegie Tsinghua China and the World podcast. I encourage you to explore our website at www.carnegietsinghua.org and see the work of all our scholars at the Carnegie Tsinghua Center. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in next time. Thank you.
Thank you.